From CNN to Fox News, the Las Vegas loon has made national headlines. This rare bird shut down the Bellagio fountains. But what happens to the loon now? Today on CityCast Las Vegas, we're talking to Alex Harper from the Red Rock Audubon Society about bird rescues and how they could go better. It's Monday, March 18th. I'm Sarah Lohman, and here's what Las Vegas is talking about. Alex, so let's get into it. Why has this bird, this yellow-billed loon, why has its landing in the Bellagio fountains, why is it such a big deal?
So this is a really amazing story, and we can go way back and start to connect all these different pieces that kind of conspired to bring a bird like this to a place like the Bellagio fountain.
Yeah.
So this is a loon called a yellow-billed loon. Most people are familiar with the common loon. When people think of loons, they're usually thinking of the ones up in Canada and Minnesota, New England, that are yodeling at night, something like that.
Okay.
This one is a bird that breeds in only the high Arctic of northern Alaska and north central Canada. And in the wintertime, they migrate towards the sheltered bays and protected coasts of British Columbia and southeast Alaska. So nowhere along the way does this type of loon typically show up in places like Nevada.
So this is thousands and thousands of miles south of its natural habitat.
Way out of place. And it does happen where yellow-billed loons occasionally, especially young ones that maybe have something's a little off with them and their navigation systems, they'll venture far away from that expected range where most of the populations are and end up in places like Nevada or Colorado in desert areas where you wouldn't really expect them.
Wow. And this was a juvenile too, correct?
Yes, it was. And that makes sense, right? You know, adult birds typically survive to adulthood when they're doing the things that are safer, and the things that are safer are sticking to that, the habitats that are preferred for that species. This one did not. So it might be weeding itself out of the gene pool, and it almost did at the Bellagio.
Oof.
So what this loon was looking for, loons need large areas of water. And for most yellow-billed loons, they're finding those on large lakes and ponds in the Arctic and in the offshore areas along the Pacific and the Inside Passage of Alaska, where they spend the wintertime. And when they go to other areas, regardless if it's within their expected range or if they're way off course like this bird, they need to find large bodies of water to land on, to have the ability to have that runway space. These birds need some significant amount of area for taking off. So they can't just take off like some ducks do from ponds. They need some space, hundreds of feet for that to gain that momentum. Mm-hmm. And they need to find water bodies that have food. So they're actually going after fairly large fish. They're hunting for fish underwater. They'll take things that are typically in the 7 to 10 inch range. They're not going after very small fish. They're not going after very large fish, but occasionally they can take them. And so you have to imagine that when it gets to the Mojave Desert, the options are very limited. The last yellow-billed loon that showed up in the region made it to Lake Mead, where of course there's plenty of space and there's also plenty of food for them to eat.
So this has happened before.
This has happened before. There is a governing body that keeps tracks of rare bird records in the state. Most states have one. And there's one in Nevada.
Wow.
And I heard from the secretary just yesterday that there have been 12 documented records of yellow-billed loons in the state over time. So it's not the first one, but it's definitely not an annual thing.
Wow. Okay. So he's flying over the desert for who knows how many hours or days, and then finally he spots this big pool of water right in the middle of the Las Vegas Strip.
Yep. And it probably did not have that many other options. It could have been a little disoriented by the time it got to this area with all the lights and the towers. You know, nothing in nature really prepares a high Arctic bird for that type of environment, right? This is so out of the ordinary for a bird like this that lives in northern Canada and northern Alaska for most of its life. And it landed there probably looking for food. And once it got there, it might have been stubborn, or it might have just been incapable of leaving that place. It's the Bellagio Fountains is just about long enough for a loon of that size to be able to take off, but maybe it's just too small. So it could have been trapped.
So the alarm goes up, the rear birders are raised. I mean, my co-host David Figler also suggested that basically the Bellagio has a team that if they spot anything unusual in the fountain, you know, they report it, they shut it down. So we've got this incredibly rare bird, not just rare in Nevada, but rare in the nation, paddling around in the fountains. What happens next?
We have a state agency that manages wildlife, and they're called the Nevada Department of Wildlife. And they manage all sorts of things related to wildlife in the state, mostly like hunting and hunting regulations, but also they handle wildlife situations like this, where you might have something that is sick or injured and needs to be rehabilitated or relocated. And so what Nevada Department of Wildlife can do in a situation like this is they can send a team out to capture the bird, and then they have only one option, whereas most places would have at least two options. And their option is to release a animal that they capture into more suitable habitat in a place where it has a better chance for survival. It's no longer endangering itself. It's not endangering other people. Those are the types of animals that they can rescue. Now, people said, well, if it's sick, why can't we rehabilitate it? Well, you need permits to have the ability to rehabilitate wildlife, and the Nevada Department of Wildlife just doesn't have that capability right now. And so typically state agencies like NDAO would be able to work with a licensed wildlife rehabilitator to bring in a patient, like something like a yellow-billed loon that could be sick or injured, and take it to this rehabilitator. And then the rehabilitator would intake that patient and then come up with a plan to release it. And getting those things is very difficult, and it also is a lot of work. It's a full-time job, birds and other wildlife. It's like having a zoo, almost. It requires a full-time attention, and unfortunately, we don't have anyone left in the valley who can do that anymore. So we don't have that option with animals that are actually in need of some sort of care or rehabilitation. And so the best that NDAO can do in those situations is take the animal somewhere else where it probably has a better shot.
Yeah, I mean, so it seems like an intervention was needed because it was determined that this bird can't get out of this, you know, out of the Bellagio Fountains that it landed in, that needed more space to take off. But I'm absolutely familiar with what you're talking about. I used to do rescue work in Cleveland, which is in a migratory pathway. And so during migratory season, I would walk with a team and we would pick up birds that had hit buildings. And whether or not we thought the bird was injured, it didn't matter. I went to the rehab to get checked out and then re-released further away from the city so it wasn't in the path of those buildings again. And it was an all-around rehabilitator, not just for birds, but people would drop off baby bunnies, any kind of animals that they weren't sure what to do with. And so it is a little bit frustrating that currently Clark County doesn't have an option there.
Hey, it's David Figler, and one of my favorite food festivals is coming back to town. It's Vegas Unstripped over at the Palms Hotel on Saturday, May 18th. Over 24 chefs from some of Las Vegas's most talked about restaurants creating original, unique menu items they've never made before. Chef creativity at its best. We're talking chefs from Partage, Esther's Kitchen, Milpa, EDO, and more, including this year's James Beard Award finalist Steve Kessler from Aroma. Tickets are $150 and are all inclusive of food and drink, so you don't have to pay for anything once you're inside. No hidden upcharges. I went last year and it was so crowded in the best possible way. We got one remarkable dish after another, and while it was a little indulgent, here's the best part. The net proceeds go to local charities. So head on over to VegasUnstripped.com to get your tickets now. We'll see you there.
So, and Landau came in and they scooped up the loon and then released it in what looked like probably the Wetlands Park or maybe the Henderson Bird Viewing Preserve, too. But they did get some criticism for their actions. And is that basically because people were like, well, the bird should be checked out, checked and be rehabilitated. But, you know, on the other side of things, they just didn't have that option. Is that what was happening?
This is me taking a guess, you know, not being affiliated with Endow myself, but kind of understanding all the things that they're dealing with and maybe how they would or I would actually triage what comes in and how I, you know, where I devote my time. So I think that they were probably well aware of the situation, monitoring the situation, maybe actually assessing whether or not the loon was sick or injured. And it was not sick or you know, injured. The bird was alert. It was feisty.
It looked fat and happy, honestly.
It was fat. It was not emaciated. It was very fat when it got to a place like the Bellagio and could rely on those fat stores to keep it healthy. A couple days for a bird to not be feeding with metabolisms like they do, that's really impressive. So it showed up pretty healthy. It just picked the wrong spot. And so hindsight's 20/20. I think they did probably the right thing. They have to make a judgment call and they see a bird that is not globally rare. It's rare in Nevada, but it's not globally rare. This is not an endangered bird. It's not a threatened bird. It's a bird that is far away from a population that right now is relatively stable. There are probably going to be some future changes for their populations with a changing climate. It will affect their breeding habitats. So that is a consideration. But right now, it is not a bird that anyone's thinking we have to get to every single yellow-billed loon. It's critical for their survival. It's not. And they have tons of other things that they're dealing with and bringing in.
That's so interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I had no idea. I mean, it's been phrased as like a rare bird. It just means it's rare here in the continental United States, but it's not rare where it's from. I mean, bless this loon. I hope he makes it all the way back. You know, I know that the best policy really is, whether the bird is injured or not, to move it out of an area like the Strip. Again, when I was rehabbing, you know, the priority was let's get them out of downtown and get them to a wooded area where release is much safer. So in general, though, a lot of what I did in Cleveland was also advocacy. We were collecting data to talk to these individual structures to you know, make often very simple changes to their buildings to make them more of a bird-safe building. So what can we do here in Las Vegas to make this a more bird-friendly city?
I love that you did that. Yeah, that's one of them. So for those listening, what Sarah was doing is something that has a lot of potential impact. And, you know, when we're looking at all the things that affect bird populations on a continental scale, and on a neighborhood scale, you kind of, as a conservation organization, you have a couple decisions to make.
Yes.
You look for things that can have the most impact with the least amount of time or energy having to be spent. High up on that list is preventing window collisions or building collisions. And so window collisions are very common. And that is when birds see the reflection of habitat, usually trees or bushes, in a window and then fly into that window. And oftentimes they die. That's actually a huge reason birds die in cities and towns. They run into windows or they run into buildings. And that is often because birds are migrating at night. A lot of people don't know this, but birds actually migrate at night. And when they're migrating at night, they can be attracted to and disoriented by artificial light. So let's say lights in buildings will attract them and they run into lit windows in buildings because they're attracted to the light. They're migrating at night. They don't see or understand a building. The buildings are at the height of their optimal migration height, which is a couple hundred feet high. And because they did not evolve around lights, they may hit a lit building and die. So turning off lights during migration, which is going to be pretty much starting now, and then we'll go into May. And then fall migration will start in late August and go into, you know, October, early November. Finding ways to turn off lights at those times would be great. Always finding ways to disrupt reflections in glass is awesome too. So closing the blinds, you can put up things that break up patterns so that a bird can see that they're about to go into an object. that is on the glass, instead of thinking that they're about to fly into some tree or shrub that's a reflection. Those are big ones.
Yeah, the reflection of the trees, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Here's another big one. I hope you're ready for this. I'm sure you know because you worked at a rehabilitation facility. This is probably the toughest topic and the one that I have to be ready whenever I enter it. But keeping cats indoors as often as you can, that is really impactful and positive for birds, especially during breeding season, which is starting now when you have a lot of baby birds that can't fly. They'll be on the ground throughout April, May, early June. And free roaming cats kill a lot of birds. And you might think, well, you know, it's natural. Cats need to be outside. Yes, they do. It is natural for them to do that. And that's kind of the problem, is that they take their instinct with them. And it's not their fault. Like, this is what cats are very good at doing. This is what they would do in their native habitat. But they're not from North America. They were domesticated in Africa and then brought over here. And so birds are just not used to dealing with, you know, many tens or hundreds of thousands of free roaming cats that are very good at hunting and in these populations that are extremely high and dense. And so neighborhoods can be very challenging for birds where there are lots of cats. And you'll notice that ground nesting birds are never successful around cats because they're good at finding babies and killing them. Sometimes eating them, not always. Those are some big ones that people can do to prevent bird death and mortality. There are a couple more, but those are the big ones.
Yeah, and if anybody wants to learn how to harness and leash train your cat, reach out. We'll put our contact information in the show notes. Maybe I'll do something for our newsletter. It's actually a lot easier than you would expect. And going on a walk with your cat is honestly quite delightful. And, you know, I should shout out the organization I work with. They were called Lights Out Cleveland. I mean, a couple of the simple fixes that they proposed to office buildings was one building had like a clear foyer that birds kept hitting. And all they did was put stickers on it. And if you're noticing bird strikes on a window in your home, in your office, like, you know, just look like anti-bird stickers or anti-bird strike stickers on the internet. It's a really, really, really easy fix. And another one was, and this one was a little bit of a bigger project, one glass building had an indoor atrium with trees, and we would find 100 or more dead birds in that area in a season. They went in and took the trees out, and there was not a bird there the next year. So it is these very, like, manageable, like, physical shifts. And as you mentioned, turning out the lights. So is that hard in a city like Las Vegas? Is it the strip lights that could be affecting birds like this loon?
You know, I think this could be a great opportunity for those that operate large buildings to try those things, to try to turn off the lights, maybe ask anyone to report any dead birds that might be laying below some of the windows around a building. That will be evidence to you that birds are colliding with your building at night. And if you find one or two, well, there's a good chance that there are many that you're just not seeing or you hadn't noticed yet. So I think with a place like Las Vegas, where I think it's the brightest thing as seen from space on Earth, the center of Las Vegas Strip, I don't know reasonably how much can happen, but certainly there are things that we can do to mitigate some of these things. And maybe we try to experiment with those things just during migration and see what happens. It would have to be something that the city get behind.
Yeah, and that's the deal. In migration cities out east, it was asking buildings to turn off their lights basically between like sunset and sunrise so that wasn't disorienting birds. And it was very effective. And speaking of, can you talk to me about some of the things that the Red Rock Audubon Society does to help birds here in Las Vegas?
Yeah, so Red Rock Audubon Society. Well, we are a chapter of a national organization. There are several hundred chapters, and they've been around for a while. And the Las Vegas chapter, community chapter, has been around since 1976. We also have a chapter at UNLV. There is a UNLV Audubon. For us, what we do, like most Audubon chapters, I think of us as a advocacy, education, and conservation organization. We have this understanding of what the Mojave Desert is, past, current, and future. We know the specific challenges that it is enduring, so climate change, drought, water, management or mismanagement and water diversion. We have less precipitation, less snowfall, or maybe we have a larger variety of them. It's less predictable and we'll have big swings, which we're certainly experiencing right now. And so all these things are going to affect the populations of birds in the Mojave Desert. Some of them will be affected just a little bit. Some of them will be very affected. And so we work to figure out which ones are being very affected and then what we can do things about. That requires that we become familiar with the land managers and the academic bodies that are out there studying birds and bird populations and their habitats and talking to them, figuring out what they're doing. And then once we kind of feel like we have a grasp on the big picture, then we can move into our advocacy and our education. And so through our education programs, we traditionally have relied on a trip leader program where we have trip leaders that are familiar with birds and bird watching certain parks and then can take people out into the public and talk about birds and their habitats and kind of help people make connections to the birds that they're seeing and why they're at that certain park, what's drawing them in, and how is that linked to the larger conservation story of the Mojave Desert? Because there are links to make there. We are always looking to take in more people. We keep our things free because we want to invite people in. We don't want cost to ever dissuade anyone from coming. And so we are able to keep our trips cost free and we'll have 10 to 12 per month.
Oh, wow.
We have less in the summertime, but we still try to be active in the springs. So we're trying to engage people year round.
I got to check your calendar.
Yeah, do. RedRockAudubon.com.
I haven't been to one yet, which is silly. I'm going to check it out and I'm going to come. I'm going to come to the next one I can.
Oh, please do. Yeah. Well, we have plenty of them and we do monthly things at the Wetlands Park.
Oh, great. Okay. So one last question. Why do you think that Las Vegas and America became so invested in the story of the loon?
Oh, well, I think the fact that it's the Bellagio, it's probably the world's most famous fountain, and it's sort of like an emblem of water in the desert in Sin City. Like everyone knows it and what water means here. And for there to be a water-dependent, lost Arctic bird that has somehow lost its way, or maybe it was intentional, maybe it intentionally left. Like, we don't know what was driving this bird. But in either case, it's unusual for it to have made it into the desert and found its way into the world's most famous fountain. And there, like, there's all this mystery. What's going to happen? How can it survive in this pond that has no food? Is it going to make it out? Can it make it out? All these questions emerged. It was like, it's never going to happen again where we have something exactly like this. So that's my thought.
So cool. Thank you, Alex. Thank you for sharing all your knowledge. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you so much. This was a lot of fun.
For today here on CityCast Las Vegas. Hey, we'll put some information for the Red Rock Audubon Society and all of their free events in the show notes. And if you enjoyed the show, you should subscribe to our morning newsletter as well. We'll be back tomorrow morning with more news from around the city. Take care.